Woohoo Hype, not your ordinary wibbly-wobbly, timey-wimey sort of podcast. Welcome, everybody, back to our next episode of Who Hype, a Doctor Who podcast brought to you from the folks at Hypable.com. That's Hypable.com. And tonight, I am Laura, and I am being joined by Natalie, Kristen, and Jen. Hi, guys.
Hello.
Hello. So
are you just Laura tonight, or are you Laura every night?
I don't know. It's late. It's been a very long day. Let's put it that way. So, I don't know. I'll impersonate somebody else tomorrow.
I was just checking because, you know.
Just for kicks and giggles. I don't know. I'll come up with an alternate identity somewhere along here. So, anyway, I should say, if you want to get in touch with us, you can get in touch with us over at Hypable.com by commenting on any of our Doctor Who posts. You could always tweet us at WhoHype. Or you could shoot us an email over at whohype@hypable.com. So I think we're going to get right into the episode here, which was a real difference from last week's. Last week's was definitely fun and frolicking and Sherwood Forest and happy, happy, classic sort of historical Doctor. And this one is definitely very different. Why don't we go around and do our traditional thumbs up, thumbs down, or thumbs sideways for the episode. And also, as we go around, if we could each pick a word, if we had to describe the episode. I think I'm going to kick this one off. I'm going to go with a thumbs sideways on this because I still feel like I'm thinking about it. It sort of started as a thumbs up and then it sort of waffled down a bit for me. And I think the word that I'm going to pick is confused. So I'm going to pass it on. How about Jen? Let me pass it to you. What are you thinking this time out?
I wanted it to be so much more. I'm probably going to go a thumb sideways as well. And the word, I almost want to say a little boring. I know that's horrible, but I don't know. I guess I had higher expectations.
Good, so that's what I'm gonna go good with. Points. Kristen, coming over to you. How about you?
Well, for me, it's a thumbs up. I thoroughly enjoyed it. I liked last week's a lot, but I, for some reason, preferred this. So it's a thumbs up for me. And as far as my word, I would say thought-provoking. It's hyphenated, I guess. I don't know. It just made me think a lot. Like, this episode really had me, like, digging in and thinking about stuff. So I thought that was cool.
Okay, rounding it out. Natalie, coming over to you. What did you think of it?
Some sideways. I kind of expected this one to be one of those really groundbreaking, sort of heart-stopping episodes, and that I actually, even though I love historical episodes, I thought I wouldn't think much of last week's, but I actually really loved last week's, and this one wasn't quite what I was expecting it to be. For a word, not to sound overly critical, but the first thing that's coming to mind is, like, self-indulgent, and I'll explain that as we go, just in terms of what, you know, the show had the characters choose to do and stuff like that. It seems like there's a few things that they're doing that, I don't know, I wouldn't necessarily have expected was even possible in the canon of the show, but I suppose they keep changing what the canon is, really.
Yeah, I think some real good solid points all around. We'll totally get into that.
Yeah, can I make a comment on characterization, or I can make it later, totally up to you guys.
Why don't we do our quotes and then we'll come, because I think we're going to have a lot of questions on characters and characterizations, maybe in several places. Yeah. I was like,
there's definitely an observation I made.
Yeah.
But go ahead.
Okay, so why don't we keep it lighthearted first? Why don't we go over our quotes, although maybe our quotes are somewhat darker, who knows? Jen, why don't I start off with you? What's your favorite quote this time out?
My favorite quote was when the doctor was commenting on Clara's eyes. Why are eyes all big? Just the way he kind of delivered it, and in the moment, and her eyes were massive because she's like, what am I looking at right now? What is going on? And so I thought that was really fun.
I love that. I have to say, I think the only person out there in Hollywood with bigger eyes than Jenna Coleman is Amanda Seyfried. Seriously, the two of them have got, like, anybody who ever draws a caricature of them, like, that's what they're doing. It's, I mean, the only thing that could be, I mean, sillier is if, you know, anybody was to say, oh, what big eyes you have, because they Her eyes are as big as his eyebrows. If you put them together, it would truly be a shocking face.
Oh, and yes, I had one other one when he was like, well, you were on a date, so I thought I should hide. And he hid in her bedroom. I'm sorry. That was the best moment ever.
I really like that.
I loved that moment.
It does confuse me a bit that he keeps making comments on her appearance. Like, but it's interesting because I saw a sort of piece of meta the other day talking about, like, his costume, like his, you know, the collar that he's wearing and the cardigan and his general costume that goes with his coat is like an exaggerated version of the outfit Clara is wearing the first time that he sees her in that body, if you know what I mean.
Oh.
And, like, so he imprinted on her in some way. But I'm wondering if he also, because he was around, you know, Vastra and Strax and stuff like that, if he also imprinted on Strax a little bit, because he keeps making comments on her appearance that are very Strax-like, if you know what I mean. I don't love it, but, like, I don't love that aspect because it's really weird. None of the other doctors have ever done that. Like, oh, you haven't taken your makeup off? And, you know, keeps making comments about her figure and her face, and it's something that people have been not, like, quite critical of. But given that the Clara outfit thing really seems fit, I'll send you the article that I saw. I'm wondering if he also imprinted on Strax and he thinks this is how you're meant to behave, because it's really weird.
Oh, it's just total no filter. Just completely no filter. Natalie, how about you? What were your favorite quote?
Yeah, I had a couple. I'll just very, very quickly run through them. First off was, like, quite quickly into the episode on the date between Danny and Clara, when the waiter is bringing them the water and he's been, like, defending his, like, soldiering and his well digging. And he's like, oh, don't worry, he'll probably dig for it. And it was, okay, something about the Danny and Clara stuff I really like, because in the first episode where we saw them together, so episode 2, and then this one as well, I said it on the last episode I was on, and I'll say it again. It really feels like the writing between them really feels like it could be, like, from any sitcom or comedy drama between a, like, couple getting together. Like, it's not any in a, like, generic bad way, but, like, Doctor Who doesn't usually have that kind of writing for, you know, we don't often see, you know, stuff between a couple newly getting together, I suppose, that aren't the Doctor and someone. But just something about the interactions, you know, between Clara and Danny, quite understated in a way I really, really liked. And yeah, I just think I could see that in any sort of good, you know, dramedy kind of non-Doctor Who-like show. And that line was great. But then we went on. I really, the bit where small Danny, Rupert, tells him, you know, that Wally is not in every book. And he was like, really? Well, that's a few years of my life I've been eating back. That was so Matt Smith. I can imagine Matt's Doctor, like, going through every book looking for Wally, if you know what I mean. Oh, it made me a little bit sad. But yeah, I can totally see that. Like, that was a real, like, absurd, perfect Doctor moment. And I really liked the whole, like, speech about scared being a superpower as well.
Yeah, those were all good ones. And I agree, the Wally thing cracked me up, too. Apparently they didn't get the approval to quote Where's Waldo for whatever reason. Somebody didn't clear it.
Oh, no, it's I don't
Wally.
Know.
Yeah, in England,
Australia as well, it's Wally.
Oh, is it really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Oh.
I don't know why.
In America, it's Where's Waldo? I had no idea.
Do you know what's even weirder about that, just to go on a completely stupid segue? In Australia, I'm assuming in America as well, they made sort of an animated version of Where's Wally, like a cartoon show. And you know how, like, the villain, like the guy in the brown and yellow stripes, is called Oddlaw because it's Wally, but it's Waldo backwards.
Mm-hmm. Oh, wow.
Yeah, in the Australian show, the villain is still called Oddlaw, even though they make him called Wally. It's really weird. Anyway, yeah, but that's Where's Wally is apparently UK and Australia. I don't know why they changed it, but they did.
Cool. I had absolutely
really
no
weird.
Idea. Wow.
One of the strange intricacies.
Cool. Kristen, how about you? What's your favorite quote?
Mine was when they were in the, like, end of the world section, and the doctor just says, afraid of the dark, but the dark is empty now. And Orson says, no, it isn't. And it's just such one of those little creep factor, like, it was right before the commercial and it just got me. And I was like, I love it. That's what I watch this show for. I love it.
Cool. Cool. The one that I had for me was sort of just one of those quintessential Doctor moments, as they're in Danny's bedroom as a child, and it's right after they're all looking at the window, and then they turn around, and whatever is under the was under the covers is gone, and has apparently taken Danny's comforter, and Danny mentions it, and the Doctor goes, "Ah, the human race, you're never happy, are you?" And I thought that's just such a Doctor thing, of just saying something that isn't quite what we're thinking, but yet it's still kind of the point. And I really liked it, that just sort of, you know, the anticlimacticness of it. And he's like, "You're not happy? And I just saved you all." Like, I really liked that. It's just so doctory. And then the other one that I really liked was, I feel like ever since we started this series, it's been, as we've been talking about it, it's a grumpy doctor, it's a sarcastic doctor, it's a doctor who is sort of like, you know, rubbing us, you know, irritatingly the wrong way. And at a certain point each episode, Clara gets fed up with him. And I just love the Clara comebacks when she's, you know, she sits there and she takes it, and then she's finally had enough. And today was, "Do you have your own mood lighting now? Because frankly, the accent is enough." I really enjoy Clara's comebacks when she's had it with, you know, she's reached her grumpy toleration level for the episode, and she just lets it fly. So why don't we talk about some of our favorite scenes? I know for me, my favorite scene was the whole Danny experience with the Doctor in the room, where he like is reading the Wally book, and then he starts talking to Danny, and he's so doctory focused at that point, sort of addressing yet not addressing the alien in the room. And I just kept the whole time that the whole discussion was going on, you always feel like with the Doctor, he's playing a deeper game, and he's 10 paces ahead of everybody else. And I just felt like, you know, I mean, we get to see more as the episode goes on, but I just felt like there was so much more else going on there as well, that I want to see if anything from that develops in further episodes. So that was really what I loved the best this time out.
I mean, I feel like it has to, because, I mean, the kind of end of the episode solution, quote-unquote solution, was that there was, like, nothing, if you know what I mean, and it was all just the Doctor playing into his own fears. But there was definitely a lump child under a blanket on the bed. So, like, what? Like, is this like an ongoing story, or was it actually just one of his little friends?
Right. Like, yes. I think we're going to continue to call it the lump child. I like that. We're going to go down. We're going to continue to refer to it as the lump child. But yeah, and I think that's definitely something that we're going to get into and discuss, because I think there's some concrete evidence to suggest that not everything was imagination, hence one of those items being the lump child, which I love that. I love our terms, this thing, you know, Mary Poppins on crack, the lump child. We have all sorts of great terms this season. Jen, how about you? What was your favorite scene this time out?
I really loved the dinner scene between Danny and Clara, or like any time that they were together in that capacity, because it's just so delightfully awkward. And it's not something you get to see a lot of on Doctor Who usually. Usually that's, you know, the Doctor and someone are having... This was a very different moment, and I thought they were really entertaining. And it's funny to see Clara in that capacity, because it's not a kind of way that we've seen her before.
No, not at all. I totally agree. Even with the makeup, too. Like, it's not that she never wears any makeup, but she was certainly wearing a lot more makeup than we have ever seen Clara wear before. She would,
and
definitely...
that dress was damn cool.
Oh yeah. Oh, I want that dress. Yeah. I love that dress. Yeah. Good points. Kristen, how about you? Did you have a favorite scene?
Well, yeah, kind of. It's related to the Doctor scene in Danny's room. I loved Clara's little speech at the end of that. Just her with the little army men. It's like she's taken it upon herself. With Matt Smith's Doctor, she didn't necessarily have to do this so much, because he always wanted to take care of people. But this Doctor is not so, like, concerned with how he leaves. And so she's kind of taken it upon herself to make sure that this little kid, Rupert, Danny, is okay. Like, she's going to make sure that she leaves him with something to make him feel better. And I just thought that was really, really sweet.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. This is not a bedside manner doctor. He has none. You're absolutely right.
Yeah, I mean, I think the way that he talked to him about, like, the fear and stuff like that, I think the speech he gave was quite good, but, it, you know, it's still, it's not really the bedside manner aspect, is it? And it makes me also worry if he gave him that dream, you know, mm-hmm. if that is going to have repercussions, you know, because Danny clearly kind of isn't a big fan of his, you know, recent history of being a soldier or whatever. Or he's proud of it, but doesn't think people understand it or whatever. And if that was like, you know, if he went down that path because of the doctor's influence, if you know what I mean, and then he finds
or
that
was
out.
It Clara's influence.
Yeah, like where
Clara's
right.
the one that gave him
Dan the answers. Soldier man, and then
right,
the doctor gets
so...
in the dream, and yeah, but you're right. It's sort of irony on both parts because the doctor is so like he's sort of anti-gun, doesn't really like the concept of army, as we then start to find out later on. Yeah, I think there's a lot of interesting, you know, things that have maybe been set in motion and a lot of irony going on. Absolutely. Natalie, did you have a favorite scene or you said not really?
Well, no, honestly, they were parts of the two that you guys had already mentioned. So yeah, it wasn't a standout moment, but like just little parts again, like I said, of the dinner date, especially I really like the part where they're like, oh, we shouldn't talk about work, but then totally like they could kind of break the ice by totally you know, getting into, you know, bitching out their various children that they have to teach,
yep.
which I'm sure happens behind the scenes with teachers all the time.
I have no idea what you're talking about.
<don't know>.
We would never do that.
And I just love that because I expected it to kind of continue being awkward, but then, you know, the way they got into it, I really liked, and I loved the well, like the quote that I mentioned before, like with the, you know, the insistence about the wells. But I also really liked in the bedroom scene in the orphanage or the children's home, I guess. Yeah, just specifically the way the doctor handled talking to Danny prior to the brain scrambling dream, if you know what I mean. I thought that it was actually like I was surprised to see him that. No, he wasn't, like, all soft and stuff, but I was surprised he wasn't like, oh, stupid children, get out of the way, if you know what I mean. I was actually shocked that he was so good to the child, which I don't know if we've seen him with children much yet, but I don't feel like he's a, like you said, he's not really the Matt Smith of, like, oh, children are my best friend. You don't really get that impression, you know, like, so far. I'm going to work in a toy store. It's going to be the best day of my life, you know.
Yeah, yeah, no, you don't. You definitely do not get chipper and gleeful and bouncy without question. You don't get that. Why don't we talk a little bit about Danny and Clara's date, since that was definitely something that all of us enjoyed. And maybe we can even get into some of our characterization kind of things there. So what did we think about everybody putting their foot in their mouth on the date? Like, did you find how they put their foot in their mouths entirely realistic? Because I know I felt I liked some of it, but I did have a question on one thing. I'm curious if you guys maybe had some similar reactions to it.
Jen, was this what you were sort of mentioning earlier? Or?
No, mine is about the doctor, so you guys can go ahead about these two. Well, I enjoyed this scene. I thought it was fun. Yeah, I don't know. I thought it was awkwardly fun, and who doesn't love a good awkward moment between characters?
I thought it was a good, like, standalone, like, it was good writing and it was good standalone scene, if you know what I mean, between two characters. But in terms of, like, the Clara that we've seen before, I suppose we haven't really seen her in this situation before, but like I kind of said earlier, I don't feel differently, you know, at this point, that they seem to have just sort of wiped Clara and started from scratch with what they want her to be and what her personality is. So, I mean, I don't really know if this is, you know, well characterized or not, because I don't feel like Clara really has that much of a characterization. They seem to be really trying to hammer it home this season, you know, these various qualities about her. So maybe if she stays around for a while longer, you know, we will see more of that. But it didn't feel out of character exactly. It just felt, but that's only because I didn't really know that much about Clara's character before.
Yeah, I think you make a very good point about the fact that it is almost a reboot and a restart, and they're starting to establish things, which I think everyone really very much does kind of like. I mean, they're putting in some levels of this control freak, and now they're putting in some levels of her putting her foot in her mouth and talking too much and things like that. And perhaps that happens on dates with her, and we've never seen her in that capacity before. The one thing that bugged me a little bit is I totally get that you could be on a date and sometimes things just totally come out wrong. Like Danny, when he talks about, we'll go right ahead to the extras. And he goes, afters, you know, meaning dessert. And I think that to me was a very innocent-y kind of slip. I didn't think that was mean-spirited or anything. But I had a problem a bit with Clara harping on the soldier thing killing,
you know about that.
Well, you know about that, about wanting to, I know I want to kill her. And she goes, well, you'd know about that. And it just, I don't know. I'm wondering maybe am I missing something cultural here? But I feel like as an American, if you knew somebody had just come back from war and an army experience and like, I don't know that I would even do that. Like, frankly, my brother-in-law is a veteran of Afghanistan. And, I mean, thank God my brother-in-law, you know, hasn't said to us that he had a real tough time when he was there. You know, he wasn't wounded or anything like that. But I don't think I could ever see myself pulling the similar joke with my brother-in-law, and we've known each other for the better part of, like, really well, for the better part of about 20 years. So I'm just, like, I don't know. I just felt like that was so kind of a rude kind of thing to do. Like, nobody would make a remark like that. Or am I just sort of missing the culture here?
No, I found it very off as well.
It's really insensitive of her. Like,
yeah,
he's clearly having a hard time adjusting. Like, just him in general in the second episode and now, like, he's not comfortable in his surroundings, and you can tell. So it just seems really insensitive to take it back to probably the one part of being in the army and being in battle that is the part they want to talk about the least, like the actual killing, like that's not okay. I thought the same thing.
Right.
I thought it was weird.
Right. Like, to me, like, if you make jokes about the army and you're not an army person, like, you make jokes about the food or the hours or being ordered around or, you know, cramped living
all
quarters,
the equipment.
Right. Like, you wouldn't, that's what I thought too. Like, soldier killing jokes aren't funny. Like, does that just, you know?
No, I definitely don't disagree with you. I definitely also thought it was weird. But in terms of the cultural differences, what you say is quite interesting. Again, I don't think this is really an excuse. Like, even if you were, like, regardless of where you were, you know, anyone with common sense would try and maybe say something. But the presence, I'm obviously not British, but I used to live there, and the vibe is pretty similar in Australia as well. The presence of the military and, like, what it means to be in the military in our countries is much less known about and, I guess, respected. Not that it's disrespected. It's just more of a novelty, if you know what I mean, for people. It's like, oh, they're in the army. That's weird, if you know what I mean. We don't have a lot of, like, you know how in America, you know, veterans, like, you know, or, like, you know, people in active service, they, like, get free stuff and things like that. Mm-hmm. Like, no, people wouldn't, like, I mean, I'm sure that, you know, there's no, like, not laws, but there's no, like
benefit almost.
There's no standard, like, practice for that, if you know what I mean. Mm-hmm. There's no, definitely not as automatically sort of known about and respected presence. It's like, oh, you're in the army. Mm-hmm. That's, wow. Like, and it might actually be something that people question a bit more, like, you know, that they actually be like, oh, why would you, you know, God, why would you do that, if you know what I mean? Because, yeah, being in the military is a you know, a choice that I guess it's much less common here, or not, but yeah, the active military is not as big, and it's not as well known about, it's not as much of a presence in the culture at all. So for someone like Clara, while I think it's still idiotic for her to have made that joke, You know, if you're in London and you're like, oh, my, you know, oh, I'm on a date with a soldier. It's like, oh, I'm on a date with an astronaut kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, yeah. Cool. All right. Well, good. I was curious because it definitely, I mean, for
That's
me,
my
it
take
did.
On it. I
yeah.
Mean, I'm sure people who are in Britain and they know people in the military themselves don't necessarily feel like that. But the presence of it in the countries, like in both Australia and Britain, to me, has felt pretty similar and much more. Yeah, it sounds really bad to say novelty value, but there is something, if that makes sense, like there is something of it that's less of an autumn. It's less of like, oh, yes, that's a you know, thing that everyone kind of knows about. And it's more of a, ooh, I've never met a soldier before kind of thing. So, yeah.
Some of our listeners maybe who are from the UK could give us, you know, their point of view on that. So interesting. Next concept I want to talk about is this whole idea about this common fear of being under the bed. And I think they really, especially in the promos, built this up to be like this super spooky, creepy, I mean, as creepy as Doctor Who ever gets kind of episode. But I feel like it's very much gone there. You know, we've had Weeping Angels. We had the Hyde episode last year. But I don't know. Did this, first of all, did it live up to the creepiness factor that you guys thought was going to happen?
No. I'll be really honest. I felt really let down by the episode in that regard. And I think that's why I had, like, I felt like it was boring because I was expecting something completely different between, like, if you think about The Silence and The Weeping Angels, and there were so many different ways that they built up creepy in the past to have this, which was meant to look super creepy, and then have it really not be creepy at all was kind of a letdown.
For me, it had its moments, like with the lump child on the bed, like when they popped up and saw him, and then when they turned around and they're facing the window and you see the blanket ripped off and you see the start of like its head, I was legitimately creeped out. But other than that, the rest of it didn't give me the creep factor I've had before. So it had its moments, but on the whole, it wasn't as creepy.
I would definitely agree with you guys. How about the whole concept of, I have to say, I did kind of like the concept of, you know, have you ever had the dream that something's under your bed? And I guess people, even if they haven't had the under the bed dream, they've had the something's in the closet or it's, you know, just outside in the hall. I don't know that everyone's had specifically the bed portion of it, but I think we're close enough in the wheelhouse that that's a dream that everyone's had. Did we like that sort of concept of what it went for? I guess Moffat's kind of known for that. What did we think of the concept of it?
I like the concept of it. It kind of reminded me a little bit about the one where they were in the hotel with the Minotaur and everything. Everyone had a door. And even that one was really creepy. Do you know what I mean? So I liked the concept. I think there was so much more to play with there, though, conceptually.
Okay, so then here's the thing. This begs the question. So the Doctor talks about is there a creature, and he's working this all out on his chalkboard, and he talks about, is there a creature who is perfect at hiding? And he's talked about there are creatures that are perfect predators, and there are creatures that are perfect at defense, and is there a creature that is perfect at hiding? And the only person that creature would reveal itself to is one who is so young or so old or so crazy who, you know, if they reported it back, wouldn't possibly be believed. So my question is despite where this episode goes, and we know that Clara eventually ends up under the Doctor's bed when he's a young child on Gallifrey, which that's a whole other kettle of fish. What do we feel is the evidence of there actually being a creature? Like we said, we're talking about the lumpy child under the blankies, for starters. What other evidence do you guys feel there was in this episode that it isn't just all in the head, that it's not all just Clara?
Well, he has the books, all the references from the books. That's why all those books are open. He uses the books as reference and says that there's mention of these dreams, of the same dream, constantly in all of these different books. Now, he doesn't say who any of the books are by, but we also have the reference to Madame de Pompadour's episode where there was something under her bed as well.
Oh, good point. I didn't think about that. Oh, awesome connection. I mean, the other thing I thought of, too, is the whole thing with the chalk. that at the beginning of the episode, like he's writing everything in the chalk, and then he puts the chalk in the fold of the book, and then it sort of rolls on the floor near his shoe. And I thought you would be really hard pressed to have the chalk jump out of the book and then end up on the floor like that, you know?
Yeah. I mean, what sort of tweaked my interest was as soon as Clara saw him, you know, shoot, and he kind of came at her with this theory that, you know, we have to go investigate my idea. And she was like, "How long have you been traveling alone? Like, how long has it been for you since I last saw you?" Maybe this is just what happens to him when he's alone. Like, he just comes up with these ideas and, you know, decides that they're true, basically. And that, I don't know, because yeah, the concept of whether this was real versus whether it's not. I mean, there's a lot about this episode that I feel like they forgot the plot of it halfway through and started writing something else or something. Like, they forgot what they didn't go back and read the pages they'd already written or something. Because, as we said, you know, end of the day, the theory was that nothing's there, that, you know, and then we're like, but what about the lump child? And then what about what was going on, you know, Orson's abandoned planet? Like,
Right.
didn't understand at all what that plot was. Maybe this is like one of the long-running plots for the season. Maybe it's going to be like this, you know, the silence. Maybe this is actually a really long-running mystery where, you know, that they haven't put two and two together again. Like, maybe this is the
Right.
cracks in the wall.
Well, you
Does
know
it work in conjunction with Crazy Mary Poppins somehow?
Yep.
I
I
don't.
mean, is someone hammering?
Yeah, I don't. It feels like it's under my floor. I
I
can
can hear it too.
Hold on a second. And now my dog's reacting to the hammering. Okay,
Okay,
relax,
that.
Scully.
Okay, just a second. I
Sure.
can feel it. Maybe it's the people next door to me because I live in a semi-detached and I can
Okay.
feel that vibrating my floor. So hang on.
It's like voracious hammering.
Seriously, what the hell? Are you putting up a new post and beam? What?
What is
I don't
going
understand
on?
it. Well, now I'm terrified because it sounds like it's coming from under my floor.
Oh man.
Under the bed, under the floor, same thing.
Okay,
Somebody
okay,
send
cause,
it to me.
yeah. Okay, well, hopefully that stopped.
Okay, it
That's
stopped. I was
really
just
weird.
like, why are we getting hammering? Okay, never mind. We're good. It's all school now. Okay, so
Okay,
yeah,
sorry. Maybe you can put that on as a special feature.
a
That was
special
very
feature
strange.
hammering to freak out the Who hypers. Oh my God. So, the other thing that I thought was kind of interesting with the episode too, almost kind of like the episode Midnight, you know, where they go out on that you know, space shuttle and there's something out there on the planet. I mean, whatever breached the hole, the hold of the ship, and I mean, clearly it was bigger than the lump child under the blanket. I mean, the lump child under the blanket, all things considered, seems pretty harmless, and in fact, probably more afraid of them than they are of it. But I'm like, what breached the hole, caused the vacuum in space? The doctor's flying. Orson goes in and grabs him. I'm like, so that would be like one hell of a figment of his imagination, I felt. Like, to me, something clearly happened there.
I feel like something also knocked him in the head, because you know how
Right.
he was hit in the head, and Orson said, "Oh, you know, it must have been debris or something flying." Where was there debris flying that would have knocked him in the head that way?
Right.
It
Right.
seemed very specific.
Yes, I mean, sort of like a plot hole there. Also, here's my other question too. So Orson, where did they put him? Like, what happened to Orson after all
I
this? I
assume he
think
went back to
they
his
dropped him.
time.
Yeah, because they promised they'd drop him back at his time.
So they just sort of pitched him off and said, "Been nice knowing you. See you the next time we need rescuing from the void."
Well,
Okay.
here's the other thing. Clara gives Rupert the army man.
Right.
It says, "This is Dan, the soldier man."
Right.
Okay. Then Clara meets Orson, who's clearly related to Rupert slash Dan.
Is
And
he related to Clara as well, though? Is it meant to be Clara
well,
and
yeah,
Rupert?
well, that's what I'm getting at. So we have this question of whether or not Clara's related, and if it's actually her child or great great grandchild or something. And so she has the soldier, but she gives the soldier to the doctor.
Yes. Yeah.
So technically, Orson would never have the soldier. Do you know what I mean?
It's very wibbly wobbly timey wimey.
Yeah.
Yes,
So
yeah.
how, if the doctor keeps it and the doctor has it, does that mean that it's not Clara that he's related to, that it's the doctor somehow he's related to?
Yeah, I'm that was like
Oh.
very
Sorry.
very
Time zone.
confused. Like I said, confused. That was my question for this episode. Very confused.
Right. So that's kind of like that was one of the things I was like, wait, 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 wait. So maybe it's not really about Clara, even though they're using Clara, saying that her time thing is locked. I don't think that's it. I think it's the doctor.
I mean, my question is if it has to, if the doctor having the thing means that that now never happened for Orson, if you know what I mean. Like,
Maybe kind of brings us skipping ahead a little bit to the doctor and Clara's relationship. There's a lot going on here right now that I think we have this idea of kind of them starting to respect each other. Like he orders her around and then she orders him around. He saves her and she saves him. I mean, it's a very interesting sort of thing going back and forth there. And then there's this whole other thing where let's put Clara's fingers into the core of the TARDIS because that seems like a fine idea, doesn't it?
Yeah. I've never heard of that
I
before.
was like, here, the TARDIS is a squishy like Jell-O brain. Put
It
your
was
fingers in
so
there. I was like, what are
weird.
you doing?
I was a bit grossed out that he kept using like the word like slave, that he kept being like the TARDIS will be enslaved to you now, and it's like I was like, oh, is that how we talk about the TARDIS? Okay, it made me feel weird.
Yeah, very, very weird, very surprising. The other thing too, now here's the question I had. I mean, I kind of enjoyed the idea that, sometimes she leads, sometimes he leads. He does seem to truly listen. Ironic, I know, as the title of this episode. Even though he's grumpy, he does seem to listen and respect what she says. Like she'll shush him and he'll like go, all right, you had a point, and realize. And each of them does have the moment of kind of saving the other. I mean, Clara there kind of, stops the doctor from encountering himself on his own timeline, but boy, wouldn't that be the paradox of all paradoxes? And makes him go back to sleep and then kind of tells him the story about scared and a superpower and realizing his fear. I thought that was really interesting. She sees through this facade almost very much the same way she saw through Robin Hood in the previous week. But at the same time, I'm left with some questions. Did Clara, on the episode where we had the 50th anniversary and there was Matt Smith's doctor and the War Doctor and David Tennant's doctor all meeting each other, they were all in the barn. Somebody remind me. A, I don't remember that.
Did Clara know about the what I
Yeah, she
yeah
was in the barn at the end with them. With
Yeah, that's
Rose
what I
as
thought
well.
too. Oh,
But
that's
Rose wasn't
right.
really there. Nobody could see her but the ninth do the eighth doctor.
That's right. Because I was like, how did
Okay.
she know about the barn? Because I just. Okay, so then that solves
But
that
isn't it
problem.
fascinating that that's where he went back to? The place he was most afraid of?
Or the
Yeah.
place that he found comfort, I guess, when he was afraid or
Right.
wanted to hide. I think
Well,
that's a little interesting.
yeah.
that
I
also
mean, oh,
kind of
sorry.
takes you to in that moment at the end of the episode where she's talking to him and telling him the story. Like as a child, things like that, like even if it was a part of a dream or if he thought it was part of a dream, that's the kind of thing that sticks with you. And so, like, I can see why it might drive him back there because maybe it's a point in time that he, like, recalls feeling comforted. Like, it's the first time he really felt safe or whatever. But it also kind of makes me think that, like, with all of that, him being that scared as a kid, like, that's not, it was really, like, twofold for me. I was like, why would he go back there? I can see it, but at the same time, there's, like, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah, I mean crack theory here, total crack theory that Clara, because of residual the impossible girl kind of thing, like when the TARDIS keyed into her, it keyed into the doctor, like she has some sort of doctory-ish DNA that's sort of rubbed off, and because he wanted maybe subconsciously to go to a place of comfort and she was trying to get them out of there to a place of comfort, that's
Well, she
where they
jumped into the
landed.
time stream, didn't she?
Right.
So when
So
she jumped in, and that's
this
when they
feels
see
like
the
another
Eighth
moment
Doctor,
of
doesn't
that.
that mean
Yeah.
that, like, isn't that how she picked up part of him and how she's always in his life? No matter
Right.
where he is, she's always with him because she jumped into his timeline.
Right. So that's what I'm thinking.
So.
So that's how they got there. And then I'm going with as far as like how she ended up in Danny's timeline. I think the phone distracted her, but at the same time, that's why she landed there, but also they are interconnected in some fashion. I think there's more of a connection that they do become, you know, husband and wife or lovers or whatever. Like, I think that I crack theory. I really think that's going to develop into something bigger.
Okay, did you guys
Can I
also
ask? Oh,
notice
sorry.
at the beginning when the doctor said, "Okay, we're going to go to your past, but it'll also show you the whole of your future, including your death."
Right.
So I was like, is that foreshadow?
Yeah, and
Kind of
she.
foreshadow there.
Right. And she's going, I don't want to know. Yeah, that's. You feel like maybe that's something. That's a good
Yeah.
point. You're a good point.
Yes, thank you.
Ooh. Or maybe, you know, another crack theory. Maybe somehow Danny is her undoing. Danny leads to her death in some fashion. Maybe he's not actually like a killer or murderer, but being around Danny, I don't know. I mean, I could see Clara sacrificing herself for someone. Maybe she sacrifices herself for Danny.
She's done it for the doctor a ton of times. She could just do it for someone
Yeah.
different this time.
So, who knows? Crack, 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 crack. More crack theories.
Can I ask a
Yep,
question
sure.
about the Time Lord thing, the Gallifrey scene? Sorry.
Yes.
Am I the what?
Yeah,
Am I the only one
Gallifrey in the
that?
barn with people with like prairie skirts. Yeah, go for it.
Puritan shoes, yeah.
Oh, you just have to go out and sleep in some hay. Okay. I thought this was a really advanced society, but no. That whole situation, what I found interesting. And maybe this is something that I don't know quite the specifics of, but that other people have covered before. I thought Time Lord was the race, not a title, if you know what I mean. Like, I
Yes.
thought people from Gallifrey, you know, because they were like, he'll never make a Time Lord, you know, or he'll have to go to the army. What? So I'm like, hang on. So are the people Gallifreyan and Time Lords are just what they ate? Like, they're the people who get to go bounce around in TARDISes and it's like a title? Because I was under the impression that that was like his breed, if you know what I mean. Like, that was
No,
his
I
race.
agree with you. I think you've
Like.
got it dead on, Natalie. Like, Time Lord is. We are human. They are Time Lords. We are humans from the planet Earth. We are Earthlings. And they are Time Lords and Gallifreyan from the planet Gallifrey. I agree with
Right,
you.
that's what I
But
thought,
I
yeah.
think only Time Lords can come from Gallifrey. So the people are Gallifreyan, and they have a level of people that are Time Lords because that's the only place they can come from. Do you
See,
see what I mean?
I really though thought it
I
was
know, I
universal. Yeah,
understand,
I can see
but
what
I'm.
I can see where you're trying to clarify it, but I'm sort of leaning with Natalie. I think this is new canon, or we're like
Yeah,
entering
all Time
canon.
Or we
Lords are
weren't really
Gallifreyan,
on
but not all canon.
Gallifrey, because did they really say we were on Gallifrey? Are we led
Well,
to
no.
believe it's him? Because they were
Right.
in prairie
Yeah, was
skirts,
it
like it was the
definitely
Civil
him?
War. Do you know what
Yeah.
I mean? So like,
I know.
I'm thinking we're somewhere in the Deep South.
I know. I'm
Like,
like,
that's what it felt
what?
like. I'm
I
not even
know.
kidding. So, we're revisiting someone else, and there's a different breed of Time Lord that we don't know about. And hello, welcome to a whole new world.
I don't know.
Yeah.
This is weird.
Yeah.
And I mean, this
Very good
also
point.
proves that they can visit Gallifrey, which they've never done, or at least
Right.
not in the reboot, if you know what I mean.
Right.
That they can, you know, if it's before the time that the Doctor blew it up, if you know what I mean,
Right.
that they can visit Gallifrey. So what the hell does that mean? Like,
Right.
surely if he could do that, he could avoid a lot of troubles.
But are
So.
Gallifrey, the more I think about it, because if we go all the way back to when we had the episode where Tennant and the Master were young, think about what Gallifrey looked like. It didn't
Right.
look like that.
No.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. I'm like, I thought the
Yeah,
society was a bit more advanced and that no one had to sleep
it
in a
looks
barn.
nothing
Yeah.
like that. So I think that's something different. I think we're meant to believe it was the Doctor,
Right.
but I don't think it
But it
was.
wasn't.
What if it's somehow like Clara's dad that we know
Yeah.
nothing about, really?
Yeah. But you know
Or
what?
sorry, along because that we were supposed to be along
Or.
her line, so
Or
it
a
could.
very. Or a very, very old relation to the Pinks. We never saw
Right.
his face. We never really saw who it was. So it could be someone distantly related to the Pinks, which would explain how the little army man gets back into the the first, like how right. it ends up back in the
oh
pink
my
lawn.
God, what if Danny is descended from the Time Lords? Like, what if he is descended from Gallifrey?
It's just all over the place. It's like all freaking over the place. That's, I mean, well, here's the other thing too I'm having a problem with too, is the Doctor being so cavalier with timelines. Like, Clara asks to, she's like, I'm going to ask you to do something that's bad, and she has him land the TARDIS, like, right after she leaves the restaurant, and she's like, oh, is that what I look like from the back? Like, I mean, it's such a risk.
I never quite understand what happens when those kind of things happen, like when an older version comes in and takes the place of that person, if you know what I mean. So I never quite understand how that pattern goes. So it was like first Clara leaves the restaurant, goes home, gets in the TARDIS, does that whole trip, gets out of the TARDIS, and then I guess goes back home, like, you know, does the Danny thing and then goes back home and carries on living from that point. Like, is that how it works? Because I never quite understand, like, where one takes over from the other.
Right.
You know,
otherwise,
I mean?
or Clara's, like, in an endless loop right now. Like, yeah. It's just kind of weird on that level, but also just the thought of, I think they've kind of made it clear that you don't want to meet your old self, and you can't cross your timeline. And I feel like that was a truth, whether or not it was in the Russell T. Davies era or was in the classic era. You're not supposed to continuously recross your timeline. And I thought that was just sort of, I don't know, I just thought it was very risky to do all that.
Well, and wouldn't the Clara that was walking away from the restaurant have heard the TARDIS? She was not far away.
Right.
Like, the whoosh, and whoosh, the TARDIS whoosh. Noise is right. a very distinct thing. Like, it's not like she wouldn't know. So that bugged me. I was like, she's not far enough away for it to be realistic that she didn't hear it and turn. Like, that's the TARDIS. What's going on?
Yeah. Like, yeah. I mean, I hear you. It's lots of questions. Lots of good questions. So, speaking of, like, questions and all sorts of interesting things, how about in this next question? Let's talk about our TARDIS, of the revamped TARDIS. Like, we've been seeing little glimmers of things. Like, we saw a bookcase, and sort of an easy chair. It looks like, is it just me, or did he get like 14 more bookcases inside the TARDIS?
Yeah, there's a lot of bookcases like around the main room, like a lot of, like, it looks like, you know, like a secondhand bookstore.
Okay,
or something,
yes,
like,
doesn't
yeah.
it? And he's got a desk and a little tallow candle on it, right? Yeah. Now he's got that, and he's got the big, like, he's got another chalkboard. He's turning it into
Victorian parlor.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I kind of like it. I'm not. I like it a lot more than I did the other reboot copies of what the TARDIS looked like. I'm enjoying it. How are you guys enjoying that new look inside the TARDIS?
I mean, I think it's cool. Did you guys also know the inside of the TARDIS doors are white?
No, I didn't pick up on that.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Unless I'm going crazy, when the doors shut, they're usually blue, but like that whole front, like when the doors shut now, they're white, and it looks like it's almost like a little mini, like, entranceway, and it's white.
Interesting.
Unless I'm losing my mind. But no, I think it's cool. I like it. It's different.
I just think it's kind of funny that the Doctor's like nesting. Like, I need books. I need a desk. Like, this is not, I can't handle all of this metal. Like, I need other things. That's basically, it's like he's like making himself comfortable in the control room. So I think it's kind of cute. But
right. And then he uses a little tallow candle because
I like
he
it.
Has like the capability of all kinds of lighting, and he has a little tallow candle on his desk.
Well, I'm wondering if it's, again, he's picking up stuff from his, like, first crazy days in the Victorian era with, you know, Vastra and Jenny and Clara and stuff like that. Mm. If he's just kind of imprinted on that first situation and, you know, somehow come to think that's normal, if you know what I mean.
Right, like, he clearly doesn't have a Kindle, you know.
Yeah.
He's got real books, and he's looking through all the real books. He's not browsing Kindle.
Yeah, because the other Doctors, I'm sure they've, like, pulled up information on screens and stuff like that, you know. He's not into that.
No, definitely not. You know, we have a lot of throwbacks this episode, and I'm just going to list off a couple of them. For one thing, we're at the end of the universe again. or The End of the Last Planet in the Universe, which for me is like close enough for rock and roll. Like, how many times are we going to do this one, folks?
And they're always different.
Yeah, and they're always different. And none of them bear resemblance to any of them, right? Exactly. We also have the spacesuit, because how many times are we going to throw somebody in an orange spacesuit like that?
That spacesuit, I was like, oh, hold up. What? Just what?
I freaked out too. I was like,
best. Can I tell you? BBC America has a sense of humor. Somebody tweeted who wore it best, and it was a picture of David Tennant in the orange suit, Matt Smith in the orange suit, and then Orson Pink in the suit, and it was like a fashion thing, and I died laughing. I thought that was hilarious. So we've rehashed the orange suit thing a million times.
Did you guys notice that the kid, Danny Pink, had the orange suit toy in the room?
Oh, I didn't even see that. Okay, so that's in there too.
Like, that was the first thing before the toy soldiers, he had a bigger, like a doll-sized plastic orange suit man toy.
Right, right.
Which I was like, hang on, because I knew that the orange suit was coming. I'd seen the stills and stuff like that. So I was like, hang on, what?
Well, and even, well, here's the other thing too. So we have all of that. The music even... Did for you guys almost a little bit when we were in the Danny Pink young kid bedroom scene, I almost got a little bit of a vibe of the music, or I'm not even going to call it music, but the sounds in that section were almost verging on the sounds like when the silence would approach. Did anybody kind of catch that had a little bit of that vibe to it? The other thing I also thought too was we had... the knocking three times. I mean, I'm sorry. When it was knock, 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 I was like, don't do that. I was like, don't do that. But we perpetually were having the knocks and threes. And then there was like chiming music, almost like 12, you know, like the bong, bong. Like we were getting some of that. I just feel like we're getting a lot of repeats again to older episodes, not classic, but older in the reboot era, and I just am wondering if this is all leading somewhere.
I don't know. I can't say I paid that much attention to the sound, honestly, but it has been a thing before without us realizing it, so, yeah.
Yeah, and just to kind of pick up on that, thank you to our friends on Twitter. We had four people on Twitter, because Natalie and I last week were talking about Jen and I last week were talking about how that sort of look was familiar to us, the controls, the molten gold of the spacecraft, and we're like, where did we see that before? And thank you, Dan Gata, Cindy Stemple, Ty Morris, and Emma, who all let us know it was in fact in the fires of Pompeii. So we are clearly repeating things. We are clearly repeating things here, folks. So other than them being fascinating little cookies that we get to look at, I have not got a clue what all of this means. I can't figure out a way of tying it all in yet. No idea. No idea. I just want, like, Captain Jack to come back. So, like, if Moff, if you're listening to this, if you can recreate Jack, I would be a happy camper, because he's, like, a cool thing that I would like to see recreated here at some point. Anybody else have any kind of crack theories on what all this means? Because Lord knows I don't have one.
No, I mean, I feel like if this isn't part of a bigger mystery, that they don't know what they're doing, if you know what I mean. Like, that they forgot halfway through the episode what was happening and just started on something.
Yeah, it just seems so coincidental. Now, here's my other question. Almost every other episode, there's been some sort of mention of the Promised Land. And I was really looking for it this time. Did it exist and I just missed it?
This one didn't have it, no.
Yeah. Okay, so I don't know where it is. That's weird. We haven't seen Missy this episode, and I don't think we saw the Promised Land, which I feel like the Missy thing is leading into my theory that it has to do with somebody sacrificing themselves on behalf of the Doctor, or because of the Doctor's influence and they're aspiring to some sort of greater good. So we didn't really see anybody pay the ultimate sacrifice this episode. So I'm imagining that's why we did not encounter Missy.
Well, and maybe they don't want it to be that obvious that it's a pattern that quickly or something.
Right.
But... Yeah, except
here's another question. Have we had a Promised Land reference in the episodes that Danny's been in? Because I don't remember having one in the second one either.
Let's see. The second episode, she meets Danny, and I'm trying to think, what else was that episode about? I'm just trying to get him. The first one was definitely yes, because it was the first alien talking, the clockwork alien talking about the promised land.
Didn't we have him in the first and second episode?
Yeah.
The last two.
No, we had we definitely had it in Robots of Sherwood, because the little guys were taking back off again to the promised land.
But what I'm saying is we saw the promised land in the first two episodes.
I
couldn't remember if we saw her in the same episode that Danny was in, and I was trying to place it. But yeah, you're right.
We definitely saw it. So I feel like there probably was a reference this time, and it was subtle, and we probably missed it, is my gut instinct. So I'm curious where that was that we missed it, because I really don't feel like they left it out. Or if they did, as Natalie said, then they're just all over the place.
Thing that I noticed when I was watching the episode, and I don't know if anyone else may feel this way, but this episode was written by Stephen Moffat, and were there moments as the Doctor's kind of talking to himself and kind of doing his thing that he felt a little like Sherlock? Anyone?
Oh, Jen, every week. It's not just you, it's the entire internet. This Doctor, Moffat has just rewritten BBC Sherlock.
Okay, because I really, but I haven't noticed it so much in the other episodes, but this episode, for what there were moments, I was like,
no,
what am I watching?
It
was very, something about this episode absolutely made me think that. I haven't noticed it as much in the other episodes. It didn't
I did in the second episode, the Inside the Dalek, and last week was a bit, but the constant, like, he's like a cross between Strax and Sherlock, and I said this on the other live stream that I was on. I was like, hang on, I don't dislike the Doctor as a standalone character. Like, if Sherlock didn't exist, if we were existing in a world where Moffat hadn't already written Sherlock, yeah, this is fine. But has he just decided that this is what works? Like, you know, crotchety character, you know, who's like, you know, people like, you know,
it's
they like
so
him
so.
Despite they like him despite the fact he's awful. He doesn't understand, you know, what to say. He doesn't understand when he's being rude. He doesn't, you know, it's just, yeah. What moments in particular stood out to you, Jen?
It was just a couple things when he was like kind of talking to himself, and he was like deducing in the beginning when he was kind of like doing that whole talking to himself thing. And then there was another time when he was, I think it was in Danny's bedroom. I'd have to go back and watch it, but there were two, like, it struck me multiple times this episode. I was like, wait, what am I watching? What show is this, Moffat?
Yeah, it struck me multiple times in the Dalek episode as well. And I've seen a lot about it on the internet since then as well. People are like, oh God, he's just decided this character formula works, and he's just going to
dear. Because that's the thing. You could be like a character that's grumpy without breaking all the social norms, and that's kind of what he does. Like, I think that's really where the Sherlockian kind of thing comes into it, because you could just be grumpy without the other things. But you're right. I think it's absolutely marrying the two things. Clara seems to be able to read through him and see that it's loneliness and it's fear of getting too close to somebody, you know, and she goes and hugs him, and he's like, I don't do hugging. Mm-hmm. Do you feel like at a certain point she's going to break down what is the facade or the barrier, and that this Doctor actually does do hugging, that what we're seeing now is maybe just the facade of the Doctor who doesn't want to get hurt again, and he's going to open up to be a different person? Or do we feel like this is the Doctor we get?
I don't know. He feels pretty... I don't know if he has, like, growing to do or anything. Like, I think that he is kind of... He does kind of seem to be, you know, who he is, but I don't know. I can't remember with the other Doctors how much they changed within their first few episodes.
Then, folks, I think we're going to wrap this one up this week. Definitely lots of questions. Next week is actually pretty cool. I think it's Keeley Hawes that we saw in the preview. And it looks like they're doing some sort of bank robbery. I mean, this is a new one.
It's a bank heist.
I don't quite know what to make of the doctor going on a bank heist. I'm not really sure how that works out. It's going to be some uncharted territory there. So, in any case, until the next time, guys, thanks for listening to us. And I'm Laura.
I'm Jen.
I'm Kristen.
And I'm Natalie.
Thanks for listening, guys. Bye-bye.